The clock stopped at 11:19, and we went to, and I'm sorry, I did not immediately make a note of when you caught, what time it was when you caught.
It was about 11:38.
I think we're at about 20 minutes or so. So I want to make sure that is reflected in your time. Okay, thank you. We can proceed.
Okay, so, Mr. Leprows, I think we were talking about the study and exhibit. Well, it's tab 33. It's R 16. And I believe you were concluding your summary of that. Does this document support your use of your definition of the study area for purposes of the parking impact analysis?
Yes.
In case it wasn't on the record, I asked to have that admitted as an exhibit. I believe it was, but I just want to make sure that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of the exhibits have been admitted. So remind me the number that you're asking. We just confirmed for the record was R15 and R16 are admitted.
Okay,
in case that's not on the record.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm going to ask you to explain again, how did you calculate parking supply and utilization? And I'd encourage you, if you need to refer to the transportation parking discipline report in Exhibit R3.
Okay. Yeah, on page 301 discusses the data collection that we use, so I'll go back through it again. So we got two studies from the City of Seattle. SDOT had collected. They were doing as part of their annual paid parking survey for different regions of the City of Seattle. They have a Ballard Core kind of parking area, so they were doing data collection for that area. And then we also got data from them about the Ballard off-street parking from 2014. So that was discussed, both private and public available parking within the Ballard area. And then we supplemented that with our 2017 BGT Missing Link parking study. So I'll refer us to, I think, figure 3.1. I don't think we discussed that before. So figure 3.1 on page 3.3 discusses those study area, kind of which the different areas are. So I want to explain again. So the blue streets in the graphic were completed as part of the City of Seattle 2015 Ballard Core paid parking study. So they were having data collection occurring in July of 2015. We also then supplemented that with all the green streets. We hired the same subconsultant to go out and collect supply data on all the other streets in green within the study area to get all of the on-street. They also collected off-street lots. The 2014 off-street lot study from SDOT had private and public, but not all of the public lots within the study area, so we had to supplement that as well. So that's included in our 2017. And then going back through, so the time periods originally in the draft environmental impact statement, the supply was identified, and then we had utilization counts completed by the subconsultants, so they would go out and collect data on each hour of the day for our study areas. So our time periods that we used were 8 to 10 a.m. and 3 to 7 p.m. on a weekday as part of the draft environmental impact statement, and then comments came up through the at the end of the draft, or during the draft, after the submittal of the draft EIS parking discipline report, about additional times later in the evening on a weekday as well as weekend data. So we supplemented that data with new counts in February of 2017 that extended that weekday time period from 8 to 10 at night, and then on the weekend we did the same. 8 to 10 a.m., noon, and then 3 to 10 p.m. were collected for utilization. All that summary data is summarized in Chapter 4, hour-by-hour basis, block-by-block, kind of showing the utilization.
Okay. You had mentioned studies that are a couple years old. Is that common, acceptable industry practice to use parking data from studies that are a couple years old?
Yes, it is common.
And have you confirmed the studies counts with more current data?
Yes, we reviewed SDOT's paid parking survey for annual paid parking survey for the Ballard Core. They had a 2016 and then a draft 2017 data. So we reviewed both of those, and the trends were very similar for the study area that they have, which is identified on that figure.
Okay. For purposes of the impact analysis, how did you define an impact parking?
The comparison of the total number of on-street and off-street spaces in the study area under the no-build and build alternatives was compared. So that was kind of the identification of impacts, as well as looking at the utilization under the existing conditions and how much excess supply was available. In Chapter 4, after each of the hour-by-hour graphics, there's a roll-up table that summarizes. I guess let's go there. It might be easier for us to kind of see it. In Chapter 4, Table 4-5, so it's on page 423, summarizes the parking supply, occupancy, utilization, and available unused parking on an hour-by-hour basis within the study area. So the maximum utilization for on-street is 67%. And we have a table earlier in there. It kind of shows paid versus unpaid, but this is a roll-up of that. And this includes the off-street in their own columns.
So can you wind that back to how this relates to the identification of what constitutes an impact?
So we identify impacts compared to the no-build condition in Chapter 5, where you're looking at the amount of loss, and then you're using the utilization. If there was everything was 100% utilized and you lost X number of parking spaces, that could be identified as an impact. But there's excess available capacity as well as the losses small.
Okay. Let's talk about unregulated parking spaces. So first, can you tell us what is an unregulated parking spot?
Yes, I will go to the definition, which is on page 3-4. Third paragraph down kind of describes the unregulated parking that exists on Shell Shoal. So it's formally so this is also described previously in the two studies that were completed as for the previous phases of this project, but unregulated parking is unstriped areas of city-owned right-of-way that have historically been used by private businesses for parking and loading. This unpermitted parking is not demarcated by the city. If it were regulated, it would be marked according to city parking standards. Because of the unorganized and unregulated nature of most of the parking supply on Shilshul Avenue, the occupancy of the parked vehicles depends on the efficiency of the drivers parking on a particular day. So the interesting aspect of this is, as is occurring out there, is instead of just parallel parking, they're parking three wide in some places along Shilshul on the south side, and there's storage of loading containers as well as pallets and kind of freight that's parked along that as well. So,
okay. And did you include the unregulated spaces in your count of the existing parking supply?
Yes.
And so did you include them in the supply that's available following construction of the alternatives?
No. For the two build alternatives, with Shilshul South and the preferred alternative, that unregulated parking was, in conservative analysis, was removed completely from the parking supply.
And again, is that because the project physically occupied those unregulated parking spots?
No, it does not include all of the space that there would be available parking remaining between the trail and the building, potentially.
So again, in theory, could some of those unregulated spots remain following construction of the project?
Yes, they could remain.
But you assume they did not in your numbers?
Correct.
And does that tend to overstate or understate the potential loss?
Overstates.
So I'm going to ask you some questions about significant impacts. Did the final EIS conclude that impacts to parking are significant?
It did not. The parking would not be significant.
Why wouldn't it be significant?
The loss of 82 to 344 spaces, which is roughly 2% to 9% of the total on-street and off-street within the study area, would not be considered significant.
Okay. I'm going to direct you to that page 6.1. Excuse me. Section 6.1.2 again. That's on page 611, I believe.
6.1, yes.
6.1, sorry. So, what do city planning documents say about the city's prioritization of modes of travel?
So, regular context, current city plans and policies prioritize transit and non-motorized over single occupant vehicles, as well as kind of on curb space planning. They are prefer and prioritize transit as well as loading zones over single occupant vehicle parking.
And do those policies speak to replacement of parking supply?
They do. Policy T42 states that it's the city's general policy to replace short-term parking only when the project results in a concentrated and substantial amount of on-street parking loss. This project would not remove parking spaces in a concentrated and substantial manner.
Let me ask you back to the whether or not the loss of parking constitutes a significant impact. How does that all fit into your assessment of whether it is a significant impact?
So the policy's part of the is weighed in as well as kind of available utilization as well as the total loss. All of those factor into the identification of significance.
I think there was some testimony from Mr. Bishop about the nature of the impact, and testimony that it would be concentrated in a what he called the south side of the project. Are you familiar with that testimony?
I am familiar with his testimony.
In your opinion, why is that loss not a significant impact?
It's not a significant impact because there's available parking on adjacent streets as well as perpendicular streets in the study area. In addition, all the loss that's on the south side of Shilshul, there's other loss along the that particular alternative along Market as well as Northwest 45th, so it's kind of spread out along the entire segment, as it would be under any of the build alternatives. That specific segment is the alternative that loses parking for that kind of alternative.
And what about the location of parking spots? Would there be parking located outside of the specific corridor? Replacement parking, not replacement, other alternative parking. Is there parking close by?
Yes, there's parking close by.
And where?
On the adjacent streets or perpendicular streets, as I mentioned, within the kind of close proximity, so you'd be able to walk that 1,200 to 1,600 feet if you needed to. There is closer parking, obviously, available as well.
And that's in the vicinity of what he called that concentrated?
Correct.
Area of the parking lot?
Yes.
Okay. Again, so on the question of whether or not this impact, the loss of parking, was disclosed in the EIS, is the loss of parking disclosed in the EIS and where?
Yes, it is. On figure 5.1 discusses the loss, kind of shows it as well as in the tables discusses what the loss is, but the figure shows for the preferred alternative where the loss of parking is for that specific alternative. Similar figures were created for the other build alternative graph alignments.
Can you use this figure to describe what you were just talking about a second ago about the proximity of other available parking outside of the specific corridor?
Yes, I can. So the numbers listed in black kind of identify the quantity of supply on those adjacent streets. So you might be losing parking. So the numbers in red are kind of the loss of parking along the route. And the numbers in black are the remaining parking supply for that specific street. So there is available, you can see, parking adjacent a block over, not the entire length. I think we heard Mr. Kaczynski talk yesterday about the 12 to 1,600, excuse me, 2 days ago, about the 12 to 1,600 foot walking distance. And he was mentioning people would have to walk the entire length of Shilshul looking for other parking. There's parking kind of one block over on, as shown here in the graphic.
So can you compare the percentage of parking supply that's lost with the current utilization of the supply?
Yes, that again. Yeah.
So you talked about the current utilization of the supply.
Yes.
And then there's an amount that's lost under the different alternatives. How do those two compare?
So in Chapter 4, which is existing conditions, we talk about the parking supply. I think we just talked about, I forget what table it was, Table 4. That shows the remaining parking supply, excess supply, that's not being utilized under each specific hour. So there's at minimum 1,000 on-street parking spaces remaining. Here we're losing 344 excuse me, spaces along the entire route. So it would be adjacent supply that you can utilize on the adjacent streets.
And this analysis that you've been describing, is it consistent with your approach to parking impact analysis in other projects?
Yes, this is consistent.
Okay. I think there was some testimony from Mr. Kuznicki about the parking impact analysis that was done for an earlier version of the project, where we talked about the scope of the study area specifically. Is the scope of that study area an accurate comparison or a relevant comparison to what the study area should be in this instance, in your opinion?
I think I recall, sorry, I'll ask you to ask it again.
Sure. Do you recall the test? It's probably because I packed a lot into one question. Do you recall Mr. Kuznicki's testimony about the parking study that was done for an earlier version of this project?
I do, and we referred and we reviewed both of those studies that were done previously, and they were very limited in nature and only showed part of the study area or had limited amount of utilization data completed.
And that's what I want to ask about. Why did it show only a portion of the study area that you've looked at?
It was just along their alignment, as well as it wasn't even the entire alignment. It was a smaller study area even in that. And I think it only covered half of the study area of the ultimate alignment. Our study area includes all of the alternatives, so we can do a comparison equally across alternatives.
Okay. I want to ask you briefly now about some loading zone analysis. How did you calculate loading zone supply?
So we got it from the SDOT's street parking inventory sign kind of database, and it gave us where the parking loading zone supply was, and then when our sub-consultants were out counting the utilization of loading zones in a similar fashion to where they were collecting on-street parking, they counted when loading zones were being used.
How did you define an impact to loading zone?
Similar to the on-street parking and off-street parking, we compared the total number of loading zones that are currently exist and then would exist under no build and compared that to the build alternative. So if there was a loss, we kind of identified that. That was how we determined the difference.
And what was the EIS's conclusion about the significance of the project's impacts on loading zones?
It would not be significant.
Okay, and why?
The total loss of loading zones, I think, between the alternatives range from 0 to 24 between all of the alternatives, and that would not be significant, as well as the city mitigation alternatives are identified, and the city could work, as I mentioned previously, policy. Loading zones are important to the city, higher priority than regular parking, so they would look to try to move those loading zones to adjacent streets, along the street. Move it down the street if they could, across the street if they had to, or an adjacent street if needed to.
There's been a lot of focus in some of the testimony on the preferred alternative and Schulschul specifically. So I want to ask you about the conclusions about the impacts to loading zones on that preferred alternative. Yep. Do you recall what those were?
I think so, yes.
Can you tell us?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, the preferred alternative will lose four loading zones along the entire route. Zero of those will be along Schulschul. The four would be along Market.
Okay. So, I don't know if you recall the, or were you here for the videos that were shown? One of them showed a truck pulling into a spot parallel to the tracks. We can show it if you don't recall. I'm just trying to.
Yes, I recall. It was at an angle, but I. Not the oblique angle we were talking about, but yes. Yes.
Is that spot along Schulschul?
Yes, on the south side of Schulschul.
Okay, and so why, you said there were no loading spots at all, why wasn't that included in your analysis?
So in that unregulated nature of the south side of Schulschul, there's no identified loading zones. It's not demarcated like by the city, as we mentioned. So in addition, there's freight parked there. There's kind of supplies that they're parked there, so it's kind of free-for-all, or as we've heard, there's no loading zones currently identified on the south side. On the north side, there are loading zones identified, and those have been documented in the report.
Okay, so there's, in your review, did you discover a loading zone approval for that space?
No.
And I want to ask you a couple questions just to wrap up. Have you heard anything in the opponent's testimony that causes you to question any of the conclusions or analysis in the portions of the final EIS that you reviewed or worked on?
No.
And do you believe that you use reasonable and standard methods of your profession to assess and disclose potential transportation and parking impacts of this project?
Yes, I do.
And And as the person responsible for reviewing the transportation and parking, writing the parking impact analysis, do you think that the EIS adequately disclosed parking and traffic impacts?
Yes, I do.
And did you think that you addressed those concerns raised by the opponents on those topics?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I don't have any further questions for you.
How's it going? Okay. Shiner.
Mr. Leprow, did I pronounce it correctly?
Leprous, yes.
Leprous.
Yep.
So the SE sound is still there.
Yep.
You referred to the document, which is R16, entitled How Far Should Parkers Have to Walk? I think you've got it.
Yes. So I didn't know. The R16 threw me off, yes.
So is that a document you used in preparing the EIS?
This is a document that I reviewed in terms of kind of identify the study area to help confirm our study area identification.
Well, did you do that before or after the parking discipline report was written?
Before.
Okay. And so I'm not very familiar with this document, but I see it in talks about, it has a table on page 30, which is 617 in the Bates number, about level of service conditions A, B, C, and D.
Yes, I see it.
And for an outdoor uncovered condition, level of service A is parking within 400 feet. Am I reading that correctly?
You are correct.
And then level of service B is 800 feet. We've heard other testimony in this case about the city of Seattle using an 800-foot radius for parking supply. Is that accurate?
Can you rephrase the question?
Is it accurate that the city uses an 800-foot radius?
No, it's not accurate.
Okay. So what does the city use in terms of standards for a parking study if it's not 800 feet?
As I mentioned, the city, well, my understanding of the way the city, I can't speak for the city, I guess I'll say. I mean, for the studies I've done for the city, we followed this similar process of looking at trip purpose, topography, walking environment, as well as kind of the available time. What this document is trying to do is make it a similar condition that people understand with traffic operations of identifying a level of service. There are different trip purposes. So if you're a retail customer, you know, sometimes you might want to shoot for the A or B if you're trying to be an attractive business. Employee parking, I think, is summarized and discussed in this document, where you're able to walk a little further for employee parking of 1,200 to 1,600 feet. And then events is even further than that. People will do events of half a mile to a mile, depending on the event. And we had documented in this in our parking discipline report, that we were not doing the kind of worst case event weekend Ballard Farmers Market.
Okay, Mr. Leprows, you need to just respond to my question.
Right.
My question was about the city having standards, and that I understand you to say you don't know what they are.
The city does not have a standard that I'm aware of.
Okay. And so you commended this document to us. The parking discipline report doesn't give us any of these distances. It doesn't show us 400 feet or 800 feet or even 12 or 1600, correct, from any of the alternatives?
Can you rephrase your question so I can understand exactly what you're asking?
Does the parking discipline report depict, let's focus our discussion on the preferred alternative. Does it show 400 feet from the preferred alternative?
Graphically?
In any fashion?
We identify what the study area is in the parking discipline report. We don't graphically say what 400, 800, 1,200, 1,600, if that's your question.
Okay. And how big is the study area as you defined it in terms of feet?
I do not have the measurement offhand.
So you can't tell us what the distance is from Shoal Shoal to the outer edge of the parking area as you defined it in any direction?
It depends on where you're asking on Shoal Shoal.
Well, I'm asking anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, we have measured that. It's the 12 to 1600 range, depending on what part of angle you're at. As you can look, I mean, up on Market Street, it's within 1600 feet easy to 58th Street, and then Schill's kind of at an angle, so I'm confused by your question, I guess. But
I'm asking where a reader of your report is going to be able to determine what those distances are.
We have a scale in the bottom corner of the graphic. I guess we didn't identify exact distances on the study area showing you every possible distance from Schill to, or the other alternatives from that distance to each side of the study area.
So you've talked about there being parking near Schill. Isn't all the parking off of Schill metered parking, the on-street parking?
No, that's not true. I mean, I need a location. I mean, there is identified paid parking. So if you look at the graphics, I can walk you to them. In Chapter 4 of existing conditions identifies what is paid parking by a symbol and versus what is free parking by another symbol.
Okay. So that way. Take us to the specific page.
I'll take you to one just to orient us.
Let me finish.
Yep.
Take us to the page you're referring to so we are not talking over one another for the record. So, again, just take us to the page, please.
Figure 4-2, which is on page 4-4.
Okay, so all of the solid lines are paid parking?
Correct.
And the parking loss that Mr. Bishop documented on the south side of Schill, which... I mean, your chart, and I apologize for flipping, but your figure 5-1 shows all of the parking at the north end of Schill being removed, correct? 50 spaces in that segment?
Sorry, let me go to 5-1 real quick. The northern side of that one is 50, yes.
Okay, great. And if we look then back at figure 4-2, it shows that all of the on-street parking, if you move away from Schill, is paid parking in that northern stretch, correct?
Yeah, parking right across from you. The 38 is...
I'm sorry?
On the 38 on the north side is still free. I mean, unpaid. Excuse me, not free, but unpaid. There are other segments. One block over... For that would be paid, but the adjacent opposite side of the street is unpaid.
And did you gather any data on who used these parking areas?
Types of users or
yes.
No.
Okay. So if the users of the 50 spaces that are lost in the portion of Schill are the blue collar workers of the sort that Salmon Bay employees, is it they would have to find, they can't use paid street parking, can they, because of the 2 or 3 hour limit? The truck drivers can't go feed a meter every couple of hours.
I have no idea what their schedule is, if they can come back to the office and move or feed the meter.
Okay. So, given the fact that and you don't disagree, I haven't heard any disagreement with the numbers in Mr. Bishop's one-page evaluation. Am I correct that you agree he's done his math correctly?
Generally, we were a little different on one of the, I think it's the south side. Our numbers were slightly different, but, it's 4 or 5. It doesn't matter, big picture-wise, of the south side versus the north side. Excuse me, hold that up. Okay. Do we have that? Could I look at it real quick again?
Sure.
Is it in the...
It's in a different volume.
I can get it.
All right, thank you.
You got it.
Last page of A1. Thank you.
Yeah, it's exhibit A1, and it's... I think it's the last page.
Okay. I think I got it.
Yeah.
One over here.
Okay, so Mr. Bishop calculated that 92% of the parking stalls on the south side of Shoal Shoal would be lost, and 18% on the north side for a total of 66%. Is that correct?
For the most part, as I mentioned, I think our north side numbers were slightly different to south side. I think he, you know, read the graphics the same way I read the graphics. So, okay. Give or take a percentage here or there, it's roughly the same.
Okay. And then within that give or take limit you just discussed, then you would also agree that there's, with his excess of supply over utilization being the negative numbers of 154 and for the south side and 145 total?
Yeah, with that plus or minus a little bit off, but yes, the bottom of that table you're talking about.
Okay.
Yes.
And in terms of, you're aware, are you not, that the economic discipline report relied on your parking discipline report for its conclusions? There wouldn't be any significant adverse impacts to the businesses along there?
I'm not aware of what they did. I mean, okay. I follow along, but I don't read every report.
Okay. But you're not, you didn't do any, conduct any interviews with the businesses or with the people using those parking spaces in order to determine what the actual impact upon the real people and businesses involved would be, correct?
Not necessarily. I mean, I did talk with a few at an open house between the after the DIS, where I talked to a few employee owners who were talking about how parking works for them, and they were, you know, impacted by the conversion to paid parking, but then they liked that for the retail component of their business, but, you know, understood the realism for their employees. So I have talked to a few of the people at the open houses, but I did not go out and conduct interviews.
Okay, and it's your opinion that the losses that Mr. Bishop quantified, where there's a need that exceeds the supply of 145 spaces, does not constitute a concentrated and substantial loss of parking?
Correct.
Now, you referred to the report that Mr. Kuznicki testified to. That report is actually referred to in your document, correct?
Yes.
As something you used?
Something we reviewed in starting when we were coming up with our methodology. We reviewed and looked at previous parking studies for the area, similar to what we were doing with SDOT, and saying what available data is out there. We reviewed his, excuse me, I don't know if it's his or, we reviewed those two reports.
Okay. So you, again, correct me if I misheard your testimony, but I understood in response to a fairly specific question from counsel that your conclusion that the impacts here are not significant because the loss to the total parking area is between 2 and 9%, depending on the alternative?
Correct.
And you would agree, would you not, that the numbers that Mr. Bishop has given us here, those numbers, those calculations, those percentages, those totals, are not to be found in your parking discipline report? And by that I mean, in order to come up with those numbers, Mr. Bishop had to go along and add up all of the little numbers that you have it's actually exhibit 5.1, where you've got a little red number and a little black number along each segment. So in order to come up with these numbers, he had to go through street block by street block and do these calculations because you didn't do them in the parking discipline report.
We did them in the parking discipline report on table 5.3 on the previous page, right before this figure talks about the total loss by that alternative. He came up with a specific study area he wanted to look at, and he summarized it in that case just along Shoal Shoal between Market and 45th, I think is what is clarified on the top. So he had to do the math for that specific study area. Our alternative is summarized right there in similar fashion. We summarized all of the build alternatives in the same way, showing the paid and unpaid parking as well as off-street loss.
And your table 5.3, the difference being is for the entire study area as opposed for the Shilshul segment or the preferred alternative and its impact on Shilshul. Is that the distinction?
That is his way he did his math, was just showing the north side and the south side, which is, you know, that street, not the adjacent streets at all. Ours is for the entire study area, correct?
Okay. And your conclusion, again, that it's not significant because it's a 2 to 9% loss is based on the entire study area, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And isn't it fair to say the bigger the study area, the more insignificant the loss will be?
Could you say it one more time just to make sure I'm understanding?
Yeah. Isn't it fair to say that by defining the size of the study area using your methodology, you're in effect predetermining the significance of an impact? Because if it's a big study area, a loss is going to be less significant than if it's a small study area.
I don't think that's necessarily true. It depends on the amount of parking along that street. You know, if you're coming up with a hypothetical scenario of what this could look like in a different area, I'd have to look at the results to be able to make that analysis or conclusion. His analysis, Mr. Bishop's, is just along one street that is showing the impact to that street, not the impact you have available adjacent parking one street over as well as perpendicular streets, as I've mentioned, kind of showing where they can go. So his is very minute, kind of just looking at that specific street, which we've never done in any EIS I've ever done.
But again, my question was, the bigger the study area, the less significant the impact. Isn't that a fair statement?
I, again, disagree. I think you can have a large study area. If it has zero parking in the areas, that would change that calculation, correct?
All right. Well, let's talk about your study area.
Right.
By making it extend all the way, for example, in the north to north of Northwest 58th Street, the parking supply up there has nothing to do with the businesses along Shilshul. Isn't that a fair statement?
No, again, it depends on which alternative you're looking at. I mean, for business along Shilshul, I'm not positive where exactly they're parking. They could be parking in those neighborhoods. I don't know where people are parking for different businesses.
Okay. So, again, there's no inquiry into the specific effect on specific businesses.
Correct.
Excuse me just a moment, please. That's all I have.
Anything further? I don't have any questions.
Oh, I have just a few clarifications based on Mr. Schneider's questions. Mr. LaProwse, I'd ask you to look at figure 5.1 again.
Yes.
I want to make sure, because I think there was a back and forth between you and Mr. Schneider where there, I want to make sure the record is clear. The area shown in red as the preferred alternative appears to include markings on both sides of the street. Can you tell us whether the preferred alternative will affect how it will affect the parking that's shown on the north side of the street that's within the bounds of the preferred alternative?
So there would be some loss on the north side as well.
Okay. How much?
29 spots, it looks like, would be lost. Excuse me. So just on Shilshul or all the way on the north
side? I'm right now just looking at on the north side of Shilshul.
Okay. So, yeah, 29 looks like the, if I'm doing my math correct today.
And out of how, can you talk about where we look to see the numbers that are remaining?
Yeah. Where you looked at, so the number on the right-hand side, so the red is the loss, and the black past the slash is what's remaining. So there'd be 8. So we'd be losing 24 spots on the north side. There'd be 18 remaining on that block face. And
so, for example, at the north end of Shilshul, where that number is in black and 38, that reflects 38
remaining.
And are those paid or non-paid parking?
Non-paid.
Okay. Now I want to broaden beyond the specific confines of the area shown in the preferred alternative. All of those green stars throughout, just a couple blocks off of Schulschel going north, and pick a location, what do those represent?
Those are free parking.
Okay. So now going back to A1, which is Mr. Bishop's chart, page 53 of A1 for the record. We're looking, Mr. Schneider's asking you questions about the numbers that are there.
Yes.
I want to focus on the percentages that he calculates. Do his percentages consider the spots that are shown outside the areas in red on figure 5-1?
They do not.
Do you think it's appropriate to include in the percentage of what's available those spots that are shown outside of the areas marked in red?
Yes. Yes, it'd be appropriate.
Okay. And then one last question based on, I think, methodology that Mr. Schneider was asking. I just want to ask again, is the approach that you used consistent with the approach that you've used in other EISs that compare alternatives such as this one?
Yes.
I have no further questions.
Mr. Cohen?
None, thank you.
Anything further?
No.
Thank you, Mr. LaPresse.
Thank you.
We only have 7 minutes before I was going to take the break, so 6-7 minutes. I think taking the break now would be good. Two things before we go. If when we come back from the lunch break, I could have a proposal as to time from the appellants or from the parties, that would be helpful. If you've discussed it, that's going to be easier. And then here's how I'm proposing and going forward with the problems that we're having with the technology. I've been informed that FTR, the provider, needs several hours to come in and work on this. The hearing examiner's office has limited time for hearings. We've set aside today, tomorrow, and Tuesday. Going into after that, there's the University of Washington master plan, and we simply don't have time on the calendar simply to stop the hearing and wait till this problem is fixed. So what I'm proposing is that we proceed with the hearing, continue with the risk that the clock is going to stop. We all maintain diligence to ensure that we catch ourselves and have to repair. I will also make sure that we always do have a backup there. I still think even if we have it on a backup, I'd rather go back and recreate the record because I don't have full confidence in these to create a backup record. We'll do it for double diligence, but I think it's the best we can do. That's the method I'm proposing going forward. I wanted to inform counsel so that you're aware of it, and if there's any concerns or other suggestions, I'd take those at this time.
I intend to try to keep a closer eye on that.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Ms. Ferguson, for the last one, because that was when you get into 30 minutes or so. It's really a minute. It's inconvenient. 20 minutes is a real impact on a case. And I do apologize for that impact, and I appreciate your accommodation of it. We'll keep working to the degree we can. And I will see you all again at 1:45. Thank you.